She's a dual Ray. I mean, she's a little wild, you know, at times, and had a lot of energy, but she was just so smart and just wanted to get along. And, you know, she, you know, they say, and it's so true, the saying of great horses make great trainers, and it's absolutely true, because a horse like that does things that you don't teach them, you know. When you're showing them, they just do things. They just take over and do things that you don't teach them. You put basics on them, but good horse like that does extra and takes the reins from you.
You are listening to the Horse Radio Network, part of the Equine Network family.
Welcome to The Ride, a podcast brought to you by Horse and Rider Magazine, hosted by Nicole Cherico and Emily Carey.
This episode is brought to you by Farnam, celebrating 80 years of equine care and Endure Gold Killer Fly and Mosquito Control, a new fly spray for horses. Built for hard work, Endure Gold annihilates flies, ticks, and mosquitoes with brand new EPA-approved ingredients never before seen in equine care. Its powerful formulation delivers fast knockdowns and up to 14 days of fly protection, helping keep horses comfortable in the barn, arena, or out on the trail. Add Endure Gold to your fly control arsenal. One spray, no mercy.
Welcome back to The Ride. I'm your host, Emily Carey. Today, we're joined by Holly and Lee Francois, two of the most respected names in the cutting horse industry. Over the years, they've built a standout program known for developing top horses, producing major results, and doing it all as a team. Their journey has included incredible highs, hard-fought challenges, and a comeback story that has inspired so many across the industry. Most recently, they're coming off a successful run at the NCHA Super Stakes, and today we're talking about where it all started, what they've learned along the way, and what continues to drive them today. Holly and Lee, thank you so much for joining me.
Well, thank you. Good to be here.
Yeah, so to get us started, you know, for people who may know the name but not the full story, how did you get involved with horses and find your way into the cutting pen?
So when I was a kid, my dad, he was a horseshoer, and he worked in the oil field in the early 80s, and then when that kind of went bust, he started shoeing horses and riding horses, and I started when I was 10. And I'd been around horses younger than that, but I didn't start riding till I was 10, and he started training some horses and just doing some horseshoeing, and yeah, ended up falling in love with the horses.
And as far as how I got into it, we'd always had ranch horses, but we had a lot of show cattle, and that was my background. And I had, when I met Lee, I had actually sold a show heifer and was looking for a better ranch horse, and he was training horses here in Athens where we now live. And anyhow, that's how he got me into cutting, surprisingly.
So talk to me a little more about, like, you know, what does some of those early days look like, you know, growing up and starting to ride more and that? Yeah, what did those look like?
You know, started, like I said, dad was shoeing some horses, and you know, we'd been around. So I have several cousins, you know, we was all about the same age. So when he started really getting into riding horses, we all turned into cowboys then. And so there were several of us. And that was pretty much it. I mean, you know, just riding and started riding, and dad's, you know, starting out training horses and trying to figure that out. And it was tough, you know, times then, even as a kid, but just falling in love with it then, and just, you know, stayed with it.
And, you know, you stuck with it, and what a career you've built for yourself. You know, Lee, you are a $4 billion NCHA rider. Hall, you've earned your fair share of prize money along the way too, but nobody really gets to this level alone. You know, there's a lot of people who help out along the way. Did you have any of those early mentors and influencers who really helped shape you as, you know, as a horseman and into the competitors that you are today?
I wouldn't really say mentors, but I'd say a lot of influencers, you know, just, you know, cause I was kind of a guy that just always went my own way. And, so I didn't, I didn't really get to following, you know, one guy too much, but growing up, I really liked the training approach that Buster Welch, you know, has, and so many other guys that, you know, on down, like Mike Mowry, all the way to, you know, Paul Hansma, and then, you know, in this generation, you know, our generation or the younger generation than I am, you know, Austin Shepherd, I mean, Lloyd Cox. I mean, there's so many good, young and old, you know, there's so many good ones. I just kept my eyes open, tried to learn from everybody and not just get behind one guy and limit myself. You know, I wanted to be my own guy and train my own way. And at the same time, keep my eyes open and just, you know, learn all I could just from watching and paying attention.
Yeah, and you just listen. Oh, sorry. Go ahead, Holly.
No, that was one thing I always hear him say is you can learn something from everybody. And I think Lee still to this day is always looking and watching in ways, you know, where he can make something a little better or do something a little different with his horses. But he's always said that he feels like there's always something to learn from another person.
Yeah, even the younger guys, you know, I mean, there's Lance Cooper, Cade Shepherd. I mean, there's several younger guys that are just incredible showmen, you know. And you know, if you don't pay attention to what's coming up, they'll pass you up. And they already have, but I'm gonna keep fighting anyway and learning all I can.
Yeah, I mean, you just listed so many names, you know, back to, you know, all the greats, you know, the Buster Welch, all the greats back then to like you said, you know, today's rising superstars. And you're right, you guys are right there in the mix. And obviously, you know, Kate, a lot of them grew up right in it. Mm-hmm. At what point did you realize, you know, that training horses, that starting them young, getting them in the show pen, into cutting, when did you realize that was your passion, that was going to be what you did, your life's work was going to be in the cutting pen?
Well, like I said, you know, Dad started training horses when I was 10. So, I guess when I was 12, he took a job and moved to North Carolina and wasn't there, but just a year, and then moved to Georgia, right close to Augusta. And I guess the first time I seen the Augusta Futurity, I was around 13, maybe 15, something like that. And then, you know, the Augusta Futurity was just like going to Fort Worth. I mean, all the good ones was there, you know, Buster Welch, like I said, Greg Welch, Pete Branch, you know, I mean, they were all going strong, Kobe Wood. So when I seen them, that's when I knew I was going to be a horse trainer. You know, I got to be around them and just watching them, and they're just so good, you know, and that was it. I knew I was going to be a horse trainer then.
What about you, Holly? Kind of, you said, you know, you learned a lot from Lee and, you know, riding with him. How was that, you know, how was that?
Well, that was a big adjustment at first. I had a lot to learn. We had, like I said, we just had ranch horses, and even as, you know, seems like a tiny thing, but like learning how to hang bridles up correctly, and just, I didn't have as much horsemanship as I needed to support him. So in the beginning, there was a lot of just foundation stuff for me to learn. But then I was kind of thrown into the fire because we got married and it was like, okay, I'm a horse trainer's wife now. So I've got to figure out a good bit more in a hurry. And it was a learning curve, but showing cattle and always dealing with the animals that way. And my dad was a vet. And so I did have a lot of knowledge about livestock and horses, but I don't know. I think both of our worlds, my degree's in biology and I always did most of the, you know, like assistant vet stuff for my dad here at the ranch. So I felt like I could help in that way with our business and have over the years. But there was just a lot I had to learn, but it was, Lee made it easy.
Yeah. Well, she did pretty good. You know, not only did she learn how to ride, but she learned how to manage a business and run a business. And, cause she does everything, you know, runs the whole business and still finds time to ride. And I just ride, you know, and she takes care of everything else, but,
you ride a lot,
but she did, she took to it really good. And, now it's, you know, pretty easy for her.
It was exciting. You know, we leased a barn. It was actually lot of history there. Jim Eddings originally owned the property where Lee, and he owned Handlebar Dock, and even the back fence in that arena looks identical to the back fence in Fort Worth. And he was working out of that place when we met. And then as a few years went on and we were able to make some future plans together and get married and we started building our place, that was a big adjustment, just figuring out how to do all that. And
That was in 2001. We built our barn. So then we kind
of figured out how to build it and do all that. And then we were like, okay, we got this business. We got to, like, it was a lot at one time, but
that was right about the time I realized I didn't know nothing. I had won $40,000 and I didn't know nothing about the business. And I really didn't know nothing about training horses. So I come to the realization one day that, I'm going to have to dig down and make this work. You know, we built this place. I gotta figure this out and just get after it.
That's what we did. We got after it.
Mm-hmm. So you guys touched on it a little bit earlier, but a lot of couples in this industry, you know, struggle with managing life and, you know, surviving the pressures of dealing with horses and business and travel and money and competition. There's a lot, you know, a lot of pressure on people in this industry that aren't a couple, much less being together and having to manage it together. What do you guys do to make it work?
You want me to answer that?
I think that's been different in different seasons of our life. That's what I was trying to say. In the beginning, we were like survival mode, just trying to figure out how to make the business work. And our daughter was little, and so there was a lot going on with her and trying to navigate, does she go with us on the road or does she stay with my parents while we're gone? And it's a lot of things like that to figure out. And then I feel like as she got older, then it was that, you know, we worked together. We always worked together as a family. Sydney always helped and worked, and she was homeschooled, and she would work, you know, when she got done with her schoolwork or whatever. But I feel like those times were, I don't remember much other than we were working so hard.
Yeah.
And we were here till, we'd be here till 9 o'clock every night, you know. And at that point in time, we actually lived in an office in our barn when Sid was little. And now it's an office, but it's an apartment. And so we never got away from it. And I'm not saying that's maybe the best thing, but it was probably the best thing for us at the time because we were just getting going. I mean, we'd been showing for about 5 years. We'd had our place for about 5 years, but still you're just getting going. I mean, you don't realize how it is a career and it is over a lifetime. And so I think things that we've been through have brought us as a couple, like, together closer to learn how to deal with those things. But as far as work, some days are just not great. And some days we just have to take a pause for a minute. And we've gotten a lot better. I know we've had some knockout dragouts in front of people at times when we were younger, but we've gotten a whole lot better about that. But that's just me being honest. This is a very trying industry.
But I think as far as how we got that done, it's because we put our marriage first. You know, we both want to have the same goals, and that's to be successful and be financially stable, but we're not willing to sacrifice our marriage, our relationship, to get that. So even when...
pull at your heartstrings a little bit to talk about it.
I got it. Even when times was hard and early on, you know, till this day, I mean, the first thing we do, if it's not good for both of us, we don't do it. You know, I don't go to shows by myself. You know, we do everything together. We put each other first and we've made it by changing, you know.
And I think that's this is a terrible analogy, but, like, you know how you get a new dog and if you socialize them, they're so much better. You take them with you everywhere. Well, you need to take your spouse with you if you work together in this. It really, like, because it's just too much time apart and you need that support. And I think we've always,
By
the grace of God, looked to each other for that.
Yeah, and And early on, you know, our business, you know, we're working 12, 15 hours a day sometimes, but we make it a point, still do, and we always have, we make it a point to make time for each other. You know, we don't want the business to run our lives so much that we can't take time for each other. And that's been the key thing is to reconnect constantly, you know, 2-3 times a week, whatever it takes, you know, whatever she needs is different at times, whatever I need, you know, but just the reconnect is the important thing, you know, always come back to where your peace is. And, you know, because one day I ain't gonna be able to ride horses. One day I'm not gonna be successful in the show pen. The show pen or horses ain't gonna help me much, but my wife will, you know, so.
But you have to train yourself. Like, there's days I go home and I've had to finish some office stuff up and say they started earlier and they're done a little earlier than I am. And I have to get my head out of that place and focus on us, because it does recharge me for the next day. You know, you got to get away from it for a minute.
Yeah. I think that's really important, especially, you know, for the younger generation to hear, because we're just so got to focus on your career and climb the ladder.
More time at the barn and just, this is all you do. And yes, they're, like I said, I feel like there's different seasons throughout our career and there is a time for that. But when you're feeling your relationship tugged on, like, then you need to make time for that as well.
Yeah.
Which it comes right back to, like, the, you know, where your priorities at and balancing everything and making that time for everything to fit.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Yeah.
And that leads into something that, you know, I think a lot of people respect about the both of you is the staying power. You know, a lot of people can have one great moment, but not many can do it over and over again over the years. What do you think has been kind of the foundation of your longevity, you know, switching back to the horse side of things, the foundation of your longevity in such a demanding industry?
A lot of different things, you know. First off, I mean, you know, just the way God has directed my life, he put me where he wanted me and where I needed to be. You know, he brought the right woman into my life. I mean, you know, so my job, and I'm very passionate about, I love training horses. But it's my job, you know, and so it's, you know, it's not everything, but it is my job. And it's, it was given to me. So I think I have to be diligent and consistent and take care of that gift that's been given me, you know, and I just love it, you know. And I was in the hospital there for a while in 2019 and was like, wasn't feeling like I was going to be able to get back on a horse again. And, you know, and that things like that put it in perspective, and it's like, wow, I sure hope I can, you know, I don't want to lose this. So, I mean, I think being passionate about it and being in a good place in life.
Yeah, absolutely. Ellie, you just touched on, you know, facing that adversity and, you know, you're scared in 2019, like that. So in 2019, you had a big brain lesion, that scare, and you had to undergo surgery, and that really kind of slammed on the brakes for y'all. How can you walk us through what happened there and where you guys were at in that season of life and that impacted your family?
Yeah. You know, we was, things was going good. You know, I was preaching then, you know, I had the animal, you know, and ended up, I was reserve at the fraternity on him. And,
had a ton of horses in training.
Yeah. You know, our business was good and we had a lot of customers, you know, and amateurs showing and, you know, we was stressed. We was hauling, you know, 20 horses around everywhere we went, you know, so we was headed to Colorado, to a show, a week-long show right before the Derby. And so on the way over there, I started feeling a little bit funny and my face, and my leg felt like I was getting a fever blister. Well, every day that went by, my face started getting numb and I just started losing energy and I just got feeling bad. So we went to the doctor up there and, you know, I don't really remember what he said, but couldn't tell me nothing. But every day I just got weaker and weaker, and I had to quit showing after about 3 days in Colorado. And so we finally make it home to the, and I get to the hospital. Well, by then I can barely walk, you know, and absolutely no energy. And so we finally get to the hospital and they do an MRI and they tell me I have a brain lesion close to my brain stem, and it's either a tumor, a stroke, or MS. And so, you know, that was a hard hit, hard to take, but they never did really diagnose it and tell me exactly what it was.
Holly, how was that for you, you know, supporting him through that and being there? And, you know, would you say you had 50 horses?
I think we had about 50 or maybe a little bit over that in training at that point. And at first it was frightening. I thought maybe he was just sick when we were in Colorado, but then as we went through some things and he kept declining during the week, we got back to Dallas, like you said. And I just remember when we had the MRI, we didn't have any thought that it would be anything like that. And we were going to go have dinner, went by the hotel, and they said, we'll call you tomorrow. They called that day, and I just remember dropping to my knees pretty much in shock. And thankful to this incredible horse community, the connections that we had. Stacy McDavid was instrumental into getting us into UT Southwestern, making that happen.
In Dallas.
Yeah. We went straight to Presbyterian, but then he ended up needing more testing done, and then he spent 10 days in the hospital there. And it was frightening. You know, the strongest man in my life ever was like he was losing muscle tone. And I mean, his mind was great. Everything was great, but he would like fall asleep talking to me. I mean, and we had no explanation of what was going on. So when he got admitted to UT Southwestern and they ran all these tests over again, more MRIs, more that, well, the doctor finally came in the last day and he said, you know, sometimes you just have to shrug your shoulders. And they put him on steroids, but then the lesion started to look more like a scar. So it wasn't spreading. It wasn't picking up the dye anymore when he had the MRI, and he started improving after he got home. That was probably harder than when he was in the hospital, because he would improve a little bit and then he'd have to back up again. And that would just crushed me, because I couldn't imagine what it was doing to him. You know, their jobs are all physical. I mean, yes, they're mental, but if they can't do it physically, you know. And he was so peaceful during that time, though. I was more anxious than he was. And I was anxious for him to get back on a horse and anxious for him to be able, and I think God just maybe let him know it was going to be okay. It was going to take some time. And it was just incredible. We were very fortunate that right after that, and this may sound strange to say, but COVID was such a blessing to us, mm-hmm. because Lee could, during that time we couldn't show, we were at home, and he loves training horses. He'll always say he likes showing horses, but he loves training horses. And so he loved that time at home, and it kind of helped him get caught up. And we weren't really missing anything. We weren't missing any shows. So that 2020, he really rebuilt a lot of strength. And then I think, and he can tell you that part of the story, but so that started to make me feel so much, I just felt very insecure during that time. And I hope I was needed during that, but it was a very scary time. And
I was worried. Yeah. I mean, am I going to be able to do what I was doing before? But
weren't anxious.
Peaceful.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, God's never given me a reason to think that he wasn't going to take care of me. So, you know, I just figured everything was going to be all right.
And you've talked to other people, and we have a wonderful story about you guys on horseandrider.com, and I will drop the link below in the description of this podcast. But you've talked a lot about the recovery process and, you know, how powerful that was, the rebuilding after this. And, you know, you've talked about having to relearn everything, riding horses, you know, readjusting the business for that. What did that process kind of teach you about, you know, patience, perseverance, perspective, all through that?
Yeah, you know, I'm not perfect at having patience, but for some reason it wasn't that big of a deal. You know, our daughter was, Sydney, she was starting school and college, and she went to, where'd she go, to Blinn?
Blinn first
and then ended up going to A&M and graduating. And so at that time, you know, with me recovering and trying to rebuild, you know, we was able to spend a lot of time with her, and that was a blessing. So, you know, and during that time, it was just, you know, when I was working home, I could ride. I didn't have to relearn how to ride and all, but I had to relearn how to train a horse as far as the fine tuning points, you know, and getting the little things that make all the difference, you know, and that was difficult, and finding, and also trying to find the desire to want to work and at it. And, you know, so that part of it was difficult, you know, finding the drive and the want to, and yeah, then working on the little things that I needed to work on. It took some time.
I think after the hospital, they'd given him some steroids, and then he hadn't been active, and so he felt a little overweight. You know, for him, he didn't feel in shape, and so that he just didn't feel good. So it just made it harder in the beginning. Mm-hmm. But
yeah.
But so you guys made it through that challenging, you know, part of your life. You're back in the show pen, and then life just throws another punch right at you guys. You just can't catch a break. Your house caught on fire. You lost your home. What happened? Mm-hmm.
Yeah. We was at a show at Bosque on Preacher's Drinking Again, and I made the finals, and then we got a call about 11 o'clock that night, and they told us our house was on fire. That was in 03 or
22. You know, that was a crazy time in life. Like, Lee had the brain lesion in 19. We lost Dr. Bartlett and Melinda Gameau in 21. Marilyn, just Franz, just a few months later. Well, those were three of our largest clients at the time. So, and they were all incredible. So we navigated through that. And that was about the time Lee was talking about Sydney being in college. And so that gave, you know, the Bartletts were incredible. They let us private treaty sell the horses, and Melinda's family and Marilyn's nephew is still a client of ours. So that all worked out. But then we go to 22 and we're back rolling good. And
yeah, pretty good.
Pretty good, and have this great gilding that's ours. And we do get that terrible phone call. And I kept thinking, this can't be real. This cannot be real. We had the home. I'm going to start crying. The home we built was pretty much built by Raised Desire and a few other horses' winnings. And it was paid for. I didn't ever want for another house. It was a beautiful Austin Stone house. And I kept thinking, that house cannot be gone. My parents had passed away in 13 and 16, and we had a lot of their things in the house, and all of Lee's, you know, buckles, championship spurs, trophies. And it was just, it was shocking.
Debbie helping us, you know.
Oh yeah. And it, you know, it was just,
it was very shocking. At that time, we was during that show, and I was, Jesse Lennox was at Rock and Pea. So we was hanging out with him quite a bit, and we was staying over there. And I just remember us sitting outside of our trailer, you know, our living quarters out in the back of the barn, and man, we just,
that was after we got back. The night we got the call at 11, we're 2.5 hours away from the house. So we're like, okay, we got to jump in the truck and go. And we look at each other and we're like, well, I guess we're going to take the trailer, because we're not going to have anywhere to sleep. So we hook up to the trailer and come on. And, you know, we live out on a ranch on 100 acres, and nobody really saw it in time for to save anything. So it was a total loss. But thank God our daughter wasn't here. She was working in Dallas and actually talked about coming down to spend the night. She wasn't here. Our house is not close to our barn. It was all separate. It was a terrible loss, but I don't know. Now it just seems like it was a bump in the road. I mean, I'm still fighting with some insurance stuff, but it really doesn't seem like, out of all the things that have happened, and I've never thought our story seemed sad in any way until I've listened to some things and read some things lately, and it was like, well, okay, the last 5 years have been a little rough, but they've been equally as incredible.
Yeah.
It's the strangest, you know, if you keep fighting and you keep pushing, it's amazing the doors that are open. Even you're going to have tragedies. Everybody's going to have things in life, every family, every marriage, every business. I mean, but I just feel like because we continued on and stayed together and have always stayed close, and Sydney's right there with our little family unit. She's married this wonderful guy, Tanner Gray. We love him to death. And, you know, I know the heart here has kept everything else meshed together.
Yeah.
Even through the tragedies.
Yeah.
I think that's so inspirational. I just said, like, what you guys have been through would be the end for many other people. There would be no reason to get back in the saddle, to keep going. And you guys it's just a bump in the road. Like it's so inspiring how you guys are able to rise from these challenges and continue on. And through all of it, you know, at the center of it, horses have been the center. And you mentioned Race Desire. You've mentioned Preacher Drinking. Like, you had so many incredible horses go through your program and help shape your program. Can we talk about some of those animals for a minute?
Yeah. I'm so excited about that question, because I was jumping up and down at the end of the year going, does anybody get it? What just happened? Because they were full siblings.
Yeah. So talk to me a little bit about them.
Well, you know, the best horse, the biggest influence, or, you know, the Race Desire is obviously the one that's, you know, did the most for us. You know, I was had some success before her, but after having her, I mean, she's been like the foundation, you know, of our program. I mean, I have several of her offspring now, and we have her also. Rock and Diamond does. Leslie Wallace owns her, but she was like, she's done so much for us. And I showed Sophie Ray at that time too with Race Desire, and just another really good horse. I didn't get to ride as many out of her as I have Race Desire, but as a show horse, she was awesome too.
What made her so special? But both of those, what made them both so special and so influential in life?
Well, starting off with Race Desire, Gerald Alexander was what started that. You know, he rode her. He's a two-year-old trainer, and he started her and had her 2-year-old year. And so when you get one of his horses, if it's any good at all, you go and have you a pretty good horse. But she was, you know, just so dang smart about a cow. And the training, she took training good. She wasn't difficult or wanted to be hurt. She didn't want you to hurt her in any way. I mean, she was just smart. And she's a dual ray. I mean, she's a little wild, you know, at times and had a lot of energy, but she was just so smart and just wanted to get along. And, you know, they say, and it's so true, the saying of great horses make great trainers. And it's absolutely true, because a horse like that does things that you don't teach them. You know, when you're showing them, they just do things. They just take over and do things that you don't teach them. You put basics on them, but good horse like that does extra and takes the reins from you and just makes you better. And that's so true in this case. You know, great horse.
Absolutely. And you mentioned, you know, riding her offspring and how special they are. And Preacher's drinking again. He just loves touring 227.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a good number.
It's a good number. You had three times, right, Lee?
Yeah.
Three 227s in the Reserve World Championship. Talk to me about that ride, those rides.
Yeah. Me and Cass Tatum, you know, Cass was in the lead for the world all year. And so I'm on his heels chasing him, you know. So going into the finals, you know, it was so intense, you know. And at the same time, you know, you want to hurry up and get it done. But at the same time, you can't wait to get back there, you know. It's but just, you know, so each run, every run is like, you know, you know you need to mark a big score and have a big run, but you can't make no mistakes, you know, and it's just intense. And, you know, I mean, all of your senses was on high alert. And I mean, it's pretty wild. But, you know, as I was saying with Ray's Desire, you know, Preacher's equal. It's hard to compare him to his mama, but he's a great horse. And, you know, just, man, if I could just do my job and cut a decent cow, and I was able to do that most every time at the finals. And he's just one of those, just takes over and makes you look good.
He knows his job.
Oh, absolutely.
And Holly, you at the, you know, the NCHA, the Super Stakes, you were riding in him in the Celebrity Cutting.
I did.
What was that? And you also caught a 227.
Well, that was pretty much all him. But first, Leslin Wallace was so incredibly generous to share him with me for that moment and for that cause. It was just a great night. But that horse, just like his mom, they know when they're in that build, like, they love Will Rogers. And I felt him pretty excited. There was a lot of noise and a lot going on, but he settled right in there. And I was pretty nervous, but as I was walking to the herd, Cody Porterfield came over and said, "Hey, we're going to hold these cows. They're not going to go anywhere, and we're going to get this done, but relax and enjoy this and have fun." And I was already talking to myself about doing that. And then I just took a deep breath, and I didn't see in the crowd anything. I just, Cody and Clay and here and Lee in my corner and Justin in the other corner. And man, the horse just took over. He's so smart. I mean, if you can get your cow cut, and he was just amazing. Yeah, it was like a dream come true.
Yeah, she did a great job showing him, and you know, cut her cows good. And it was really a good time. It was, you know, so she got to show him as a 4-year-old a couple of times, and then we ended up selling him to Leslin. But so it was neat for her to get that opportunity to show him like that. And especially after, you know, we hauled him for nearly 2 years in the open, and she got him ready, you know,
every time,
3 or 4 days every week, you know, since, you know, for that whole time. And so for her to get that opportunity, and for me to get a chance to back her up, you know, and let her have some of the fun, was that was cool. I enjoyed it.
It was awesome. I feel so silly. You know, we have pictures of Lee showing all over this office, and he's not smiling in any of them. There's not one picture I'm not smiling in. And yeah, at the end of the run, like, he's just crawling around on the ground, and I didn't feel like we were going very far. And I remember looking up at Clay, and I'm like, "Do I stay?" And I'm like giggling and kind of crying at the same time. It was just such a full circle moment for us. And
and along with the Bartlett brand, you know, and those horses that,
well, Doc had every opportunity to sell that mare a million times.
Yeah,
and
Ray's Desire,
had he ever done that, we wouldn't be having this chat today. So
yeah,
it's pretty cool.
Yeah. And, you know, building those relationships, I've talked to a lot of people in the industry, you know, across the industry, you know, whether it's cutting or cow horses or reining or ranch, and like, building those relationships with your clients and having them. And you guys just touched on it, like, how important was that relationship that you built, you know, with Ray's Desire's owner and keeping her in the barn for all those years?
It was incredible. It was hard at times, though, too. I mean, it's not, you know, there were things we had to navigate through with Doc, and we wouldn't always agree, but we had a long-term commitment, and he was very loyal to us.
Yeah, he was good.
He was amazing. And it's, you know, but it is, you're right. It, and also through everything we've been through, those relationships, Jeremy Barwick, you know, the Horseman for Christ, Joe Howard, like they're people that have been instrumental in our life in the good times, but man, have they stepped up in the tough times. And that's why, you know, this is an incredible horse community, this cutting community, and it's really worth it to take care of those relationships along the way. Even if you're not still doing business with somebody, you know, there's no reason, because it is a small community, and we really stick together. I'm really feel that way.
Very much so.
Yeah, absolutely. I do think a lot of people don't realize, like, we say the horse world is small, but I don't think we realize quite how small it
really is.
Yeah.
It's a very tiny world.
It is.
And so we just talked about some incredible, incredible horses who have made such an impact on not only you guys, but on the sport, and, you know, and we'll continue to see that impact for many, many generations and years to come. But you guys, you've seen the best of the horses, but I'm sure you've also seen some horses that may not have had as much talent in the cutting pen. And you probably really have had the opportunity to get to know, like, what traits you're looking for, what you're looking for in a horse specific to this job. Can you break it down for us, for our listeners who maybe don't spend as much time in the cutting pen or watching a cutting? What makes a truly great cutting horse in your eyes? And has that answer changed over time?
You know, I think for me, I love horses. You know, they don't have to be the best horse or the prettiest horse. I enjoy training horses. So, you know, I think first off, you're going to start with pedigree, and then you're going to go to conformation. You know, so a horse has to be made right. He has to be made and be able to do what we're asking him to do. You know, no different than an athlete. You know, I can't go play basketball because I can't jump. You know, so if the horse can't jump, don't try to make him do it. But, you know, just a horse has to be made for it, and then he has to be bred extremely well to be competitive. Not so much just to have a cutting horse, you know, that you use on the ranch or something, but just a horse that's bred really, really well, and then you know, then you got to get to the trainability side, you know, and then how much horse this cow. So there's a lot that goes into, you know, picking out, like drafting a horse, you know, for your team. There's a lot goes into it, you know. It's just because a horse is talented don't mean he's going to be good, you know. It's they got to have the full package, you know, smart and control, you know. It's just talent, you know. It's all got to be there to make a champion.
Absolutely. And I'm sure, you know, you've been in the industry for a while. You mentioned, you know, Buster Welch, some of the greats at the beginning, all the way up to, you know, to the latest talent. And riding styles have changed over the years, and the horses have changed immensely over the years. You know, cutting back then looks a lot different than cutting today.
Right.
Yeah, how have you seen, you know, kind of the industry shift while you've been an active member of it?
I could give you some answers just in general, but I, you know, honestly, I really hadn't paid much attention to it because I've tried to just evolve with it. So I don't feel like I see a big difference. I mean, obviously I see a difference in the, you know, the older horses, and then today's horses, you know, they stop straight, and now they stop straight, you know, not skipping around. But I tried to just evolve with the horses, with the direction that it's going as far as my training goes. And, you know, a lot of guys will still tell you, I mean, I'm a lot old school, you know, as far as how I approach training the horse. But one thing remains is if you're going to if you're going to win a cutting, you have to have a cow horse. Your horse has to know what a cow is, and he's got to be trained up. So I think if a guy does that, it doesn't really matter what the trend is or where it came from, you know, especially us older guys, you know, we need to evolve with the business and not worry about it. Just evolve.
There was a local amateur that showed, really nice guy that shows around here a lot. And he made a comment on a post last year after one of your runs on Preacher. And I thought it was worded so great. It was like, Lee is the best combination of the old and new. And it looks like a ballet, like, you know, and like he's so.
Yeah. I agree.
Still trains a cow horse, not a mechanical horse. But,
yeah. Yeah. You know, try to.
But very correct horse.
Yeah. You got to stay current.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Well, thank you, Lee and Holly, so much for joining us today and, you know, talking about it. Where can people find you guys if they want to learn more about your business, about your training? Where can they find you?
We have our business Facebook page is Lee Francois Cutting Horses. And we don't have our website. We're working on a new website, so we don't have that. But you could happy to message us on through Facebook. And I know our contact information's on there as well.
Perfect. Well, that's where we can find you. Thank you guys so much for joining us.
Well, thank you. Appreciate you having us on.
Thank you.
This episode of The Ride is brought to you by Farnham and Endure Gold Killer Fly and Mosquito Control, a new fly spray for horses. Thank you guys for tuning into The Ride Podcast. We hope you enjoyed this episode, and please be sure to subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts. Follow Horse and Rider Magazine on social media and find us at horseandrider.com to see all the cool things that we're up to. And if you have any comments or questions, please be sure to hit us up at horseandrider@equinenetwork.com. We want to hear from you guys. And if you like what you're listening to, please be sure to leave us a review on iTunes.